Welcome to this Project Cargo Weekly interview, and our special guest of honor today is Mr. Frank Scheibner, the President and CEO of Atlas Heavy Transport in Houston, Texas. First and foremost, Frank, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you, Bo.
It's good to have you here. As you might know from some of the previous interviews I'm sure you've seen, I always let the accused, so to speak, give a little hint on their past background in shipping, forwarding, and trucking. So how come you are where you are, and how did you get into logistics in the first place, Frank?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't done anything else in my life except for logistics. So I did my apprenticeship program in Europe, and then did my master's degree in international forwarding. And then basically, as a young person, ended up here in the United States and have been here since 89, so quite a long time ago. So always been in logistics, and then, you know, for the last few years, last 10 years, really specialized on the project side. So.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so definitely you have the experience. How do you find, there are a few, let's say European background and education in logistics that ended up in the States like yourself. Do you find that having the education background from Europe, where, let's say, logistics is more formalized, has that been an asset for you moving to the States?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, the whole idea of the apprenticeship program is definitely something what we are missing here.
Yeah.
You have it on the trades, similar programs, but on the commercial side, not really. So it definitely helps if you go through an apprenticeship program and you learn the different aspects of a company, and it gives you a much bigger, broader background, and then you can put people in different departments versus here. We have to train the people in the different department. It works as well. It's just a different setup. So
I understand.
We make it work.
I understand. Atlas Heavy Transport in Houston. Of course, the name kind of says itself, but perhaps you could elaborate a little bit on the rather fresh history, but still long-standing background of experience that you have in this field.
I could not have put it any better way, as you just said it. new but long-standing history. That's exactly right. So it was the former Hansa Meyer here in the U.S. So we started Hansa Meyer in 2011, January. So 10 years ago, and then as a freight forwarding company, project freight forwarding company, part of the Hansa Meyer network. And then after a few years, we made a decision to have our own assets to basically help customers on a door-to-door setup and not having to depend on third parties. So that's when Hansa Meyer Heavy Haul was born in 2015. So we have our own platform trailers, hydraulic platform trailers, gold hovers, gantry crane, jack and slide, and so on. And why did we do that? Basically to differentiate ourselves from other people in the market. Just recently we have decided to be on our own here in the US. Hansa Meyer is a non-asset freight forwarder everywhere else, or was everywhere else except for here. And now, again, they will concentrate on their non-asset-based setup. Whereas we want to continue to invest in our assets and expand further and so on. So it was a good time, and it was a good deal for everybody for us to be separate, and now we're independent, and we have the great CLC network worldwide with very good partners, all over the place. And we're working with a number of them. And it makes it even easier now for some of them, because we're not a competitor, so to speak, anymore. Yeah. So, yeah, it's very good for us.
Okay. That it certainly makes a lot of sense. You might say in some ways that you're like a ship owner, except that you have assets on the ground, so to speak, and anyone who has a project to move can come to you, and you will treat them fairly and equally. Whoever controls the cargo, may the best man win, right?
That's correct. And it can be We work with customers directly. We obviously here in the US, we have a lot of direct customers where we built the launch pad in or two launch pads in Florida, or helped to build launch pads in Florida, okay. Or moving, you know, putting plants to go steel plant in Sinton, Texas. So we can work with customers directly, and we work with forwarders and around the world, and also with local forwarders here for domestic parts. So it's quite open, you know, if our assets can be of assistance and if we can do it, and then it will be quite good. We do all of our own engineering in-house here. Okay. So we have our own fabrication, we have our own paint shop here. So yeah, it's quite
a good setup. Very impressive, Frank. And I think, as you know yourself, the shipping and forwarding world is changing a lot. You have ship owners going ashore. You have forwarders owning ships. And it's a little bit muddled. It's not so traditional anymore. So knowing that you are an asset owner, but you are neutral, that means since you know the forwarding background as well, if a forwarder comes to you, many of my viewers are forwarders, they come to you with an inquiry, you will quote to them. You will not dig out who is their customer and the backdoor selling. You will be totally neutral, isn't it?
Correct. And the advantage they have, I mean, if they go to another trucking company, another asset-based company, well, most of them here in the United States, if not all, cannot really help with the port setup and so on. But we can do that here because of our background. Oh. So we can basically, if a shipment comes into the United States, you know, we can handle it as soon as the forwarder lets us know which ship it is coming in. We can do the rest and we deliver it to the job site and or even set it onto pedestals and foundations, etc., whatever is needed.
Okay, very, very impressive, Frank. One question I have to you, I know from experience and also from my own past in project forwarding with Martin Bencher, that sometimes inland haulage in the States can be, let's say, not only cumbersome, but terribly expensive, and some surprises may happen. And I've heard that from a variety of sources, even though they speak good English, still the bill doesn't look like English, if you understand what I mean. Yeah. Why is that so? Are there some people that are not so reliable in domestic trucking in the States, or how would you characterize that?
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up here. So there's a number of elements here. Number one, you have the different states here, right? It's all the US, but you have all the different states, and every state has their own regulations in terms of axle loading, in terms of what consists of a super load, etc. Uh-huh. That's number one. So it's not, you know, some will allow you to travel during the day, other ones will allow you only to travel at night. Yeah. Some you need several escorts, some you don't, some from this length on, and some is different. So that's the first hurdle. So it's not a one deal. I have this piece and it's going to work everywhere. California has their own set of rules, completely different, yeah. Right? And then you have also the states don't allow, not all states allow the same amount of equipment, or the same type of equipment, right? So okay. Some still struggle with hydraulic platform trailers, which they don't allow, or they give you a reduced axle loading. Then you have the whole bridge set up here. If you know the European trailer manufacturers, Goldhofer, Scheuerli, et cetera, they build special trailers here just for the US, where the distance between the axles is much longer. Uh-huh. So they don't allow you to have like a traditional Goldhofer where axle after axle after axle, you will not get the weight per axle you need in order to move. So, and then they will make you go the full width of the bridge, right? So that's why we sometimes travel a 20-foot wide, right? Which you would never do in Europe, for example. You couldn't go around any corner. So all of these things. So that's on the trailer side. And then you have the other situation with the utilities. All of the power lines, or most of the power lines and so on, is all above ground. Right. So you come, when you get into the higher, and that's when it gets really expensive, when you get into the higher areas, right? So 20 feet and above, you now run into transmission lines and things like that, which have to be disconnected, and it gets really expensive. So yeah. That's where it is just different. Yeah.
Right. So you really, so transferring, let's say Chinese or even European conditions onto the US and believing it's an open market is a no-no. Every state is different, and it requires basically a proper survey in each state wherever you cross, right?
We have more or less 1 to 2 people just dedicated to run route surveys. And we have right now a team going from Minnesota to California. We have another team going from Minnesota to Tennessee. We will have one in Ohio. We will have one going from the Midwest to New York here, certainly. And they run, you know, we have a laser mounted high pole, which we can at highway speeds, you know, check all the lines and document them and so on. So, yeah, I mean, 100,000 miles on a pickup truck is quite common per year.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah, of course, it's I'm coming from Denmark. I believe Germany is a big country, but and you're coming from Germany, believing certainly US is a big country. So, so as we say, size does matter, and there are a lot of things to check out in advance. How would you say that that the business is running? How do you expect the business running for you in the year now? COVID is more or less not over yet, but still there. Can you see inquiries picking up, more and more goods moving around? Or how would you say that the business outlook is?
Yeah, I mean, from what I see so far, positive, right? Okay. I mean, we have not missed a beat at all. Now, I don't know if that is coming sometimes on the capital projects, right? It hits us later, because when the transportation on the project side comes, right, those decisions have been made years before, right? So I don't know if this is still coming, but we did not miss anything during the COVID, and we are not, I mean, the crews are busy. I mean, if you look in the yard right now, there's nothing there. All the equipment is gone. So, which is a good thing, right? So, and it does not, it continues to look like that, at least till the end of the year from what I see so far. So
yeah,
I cannot complain.
No, so in a way, COVID has not been a hamper on business for you, and I certainly hear from the ship owners they have never been happier than they are these days.
It is interesting. We are trying to buy some additional trucks, prime movers for our fleet here, and we run a fleet of Western Stars, which is Mercedes-Benz basically, or Daimler-Benz now,
right?
Apart, and they're basically telling us we will not talk to you this year, right? So their complete production is sold out for the entire year. So doesn't reflect what you hear in other places in terms of COVID. I mean, yeah, you cannot even get a pickup truck. I mean, we're trying for a month now to get 2 pickup trucks here for the crew.
It's incredible. If I had known this, I would have bought more shares in companies like yours and ship owning, I guess. Yep. But it's always after the fact. One question that comes to mind with the new presidency we just had the foreign minister in Denmark here yesterday, and it recalls me to something that Biden said he wanted to invest a huge amount of money in the American infrastructure. What is the status of the infrastructure? Is it really that run down, as some newspapers tell us, or is it again such a huge country, a variety of situations?
So the answer to that is yes and yes. So it is a variety, and it depends where you go. But yes, there's quite a bit of infrastructure which needs to be replaced, and we see that. Okay. It is not uncommon that when we have a long route and a very heavy piece, and we ask for a permit, that the permit then gets granted, and then later on a bridge gets derated, right, as we are moving and the permit's being put on hold. So it's not uncommon. So there is a desperate need to improve the infrastructure, the bridges and so on. And as you can imagine, a country of this size, we're not just talking about 100 bridges here. There's thousands and thousands of bridges. So yeah, there is definitely investment is needed, and this will be good for us. In fact, we just closed a piece of business here to run big bridge girders, 22 of them, later on in the summer for an infrastructure project.
Okay. So fantastic. Now, it's good, and I certainly know from the past, you know your business, Frank, that there's no secret in saying that, even to my viewers, and I also can confirm my viewers that you didn't buy me that dinner yet, so I can say it freely, right? Right.
But if you come, I'll buy you dinner. That's not a problem.
Oh, yes, certainly. one thing as well, I think many would like to know, customs clearance in the States. You're sitting in Houston. Houston is often used for as an entry point, even for places far north or far west. Where is customs clearance taking place? Is that happening at the entry port or at the delivery point, or how does it work?
I mean, 90, don't hold me to that, but 95% always at the port of entry. You know, the duty rate, unless you have a very special project, you know, for, where you put engine assemblies and so on together and you're bringing in parts and then make an engine in a free trade zone and so on. But that is really, I mean, you know, in our business, in the project business, I cannot even tell you when the last time is where something was not clear, unless it goes into Canada. Then you might have an exception where you know, in bond document is generated and then it's cleared on the border going into Canada. But anything here, what is delivered in the United States, normally gets cleared at the port of entry.
Okay.
Which is normally not a problem anymore. I mean, it's all automated, so.
Right, right. And you cover all of the states. Let's say, assume I had a project into Canada via Houston. You could do that too, couldn't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. We have the license to go into Canada, so yes.
Okay.
No problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and in Mexico, is that another matter, or?
So yeah, I will bring our trucks to the border, but
right.
not any further. So
right, right.
I think you need to be a specialized, you need to be a Mexican, in my opinion, you need to be a Mexican carrier to do business in Mexico.
I was thinking of a little joke here that you would be sure if you bring your trucks down there, you know, there is a backhaul always, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Tell me about your office setup, your headcount. Where's your office located in Houston? Tell me a little bit about your colleagues, your team, so to speak.
Yeah. So the office is on the east side of Houston, about 15 minutes to the port, north of the port, right? East of the city. We have about 50 people plus at the moment here. So that includes our heavy haul drivers, our regular drivers, rigging personnel, SPMT operators, supervisors, engineering, drafting, mechanical shop, fabrication shop, and then paint, and then the logistics team here. So there's people with all kinds of backgrounds you can imagine. So
okay.
On the international side, we have some international colleagues here too, mechanics who have, you can take a full truck engine apart and put it back together. So
fantastic.
That spectrum is pretty wide.
Okay, very, very good. Let me elaborate on one question I was thinking, asking you to elaborate on, the engineering part. That's a big thing. I can certainly foresee many of the members also in the network that I chair who are small and medium sized. They don't have an engineering department. They might have an inquiry from a long-term customer, but they cannot really, let's say, engineer the solution for the customer. So you could do that for them engineering-wise and tell them this can't be done, you have to do this in order to make it work, right?
Yeah, so for us, super important, and for our customers, so internally there is a rule in the company, no piece over 100,000 pounds can be put on a trailer unless it's completely engineered. So when you get into platform trailers, you need to have engineering to make sure pieces are put in the right place on the trailer, they fit on the trailer, center of gravity is calculated, their rigging is calculated, etc. Then we do a lot of barge moves, so there's a lot of calculation there to be done. Particularly when you go into blue water with a barge, right? That all has to be done, you know, through engineering, any type for our gantries, any type of the header beams, lift calculation, so that has to be engineered, right? So.
Yeah.
You cannot, in my opinion, I know it's done here sometimes, but not in our company. All goes through engineering, super important.
Okay, and you mentioned one thing, of course, we have the mighty Mississippi and we have other rivers in the great country where you are sitting. So that means you can also, let's say a project going inland, but it's not only trucking, you can also do barge, coast or whatever it's called for inland by waterway, right?
We do a lot of it.
Okay.
So we, you know, all the what we did in Cape Canaveral, all this came from the Midwest. So it all went from the manufacturer by truck to the barge. Then we loaded, we have our own SBMTs, or built over PSDs, right? Roll them onto the barge, do the securing. We have our own stands, our own beams. We have our own welding crew. We have, you know, mobile welders. We secure the barge, then the barge goes, and then we do the same, the roll off, and then we'll deliver it and, you know, set it on stands. So
fantastic. Now, I must say, I've been looking forward to this interview, Frank. Of course, now I know that you've been very busy in the let's say, not only takeover, but the renaming and rebranding of your new setup. I think it's a smart move, and I think most of our viewers will be, if not all of them, will be very impressed by what you can do. How do you see the future? How would you go about, you're busy now as it is, there will always be a downturn, as we say, after a busy period. How do you go about making sure that you are known in the market? You have to now make sure that the world knows about Atlas. How do you make that happen?
Yeah, so no, it's a good point. So you know, with the help of yourself and other, you know, team members around the world, so that we get our brand name out into the network. So that is one way. And then we have a local sales team here. The advantage is now, because you know, we have assets, and you know, in almost all cases when we go to a job site, we are known for, you know, very well and good maintained equipment. So
yeah,
because we have our own paint shop, our equipment always looks in pristine condition, and that helps because people want us to come back, right? So and that's for me. So we are building a customer base, and you know, and it's getting bigger and bigger. So and one customer then talks to another customer, construction company talks to another construction company, and that's how we basically have been growing over the years. And I mean, so far, knock on wood, is pretty good. So
yeah, one thing leads to the other, and good reputation, of course, travels. The problem is, if one get a bad reputation, it's almost impossible to get rid of, you know. So it's really important to care for that. It's very, very good, Frank. I must say, I don't have too many other questions that comes to my mind. I think you answered all of them concisely, as what I would expect from a professional like yourself. I want to say officially, thank you very much, Frank, for joining this interview.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
And to all our listeners, viewers, and readers around the world, this was an exclusive interview with the president and CEO of Atlas Heavy Transport, Mr. Frank Schreibner. And do get in touch with him at any time, him and his colleagues, when you need a quote in the great place called the USA. Thank you very much.